Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton. I'm Travis. Kyle is here. And baby, we're 10-4. We're back in first place in the NFC North, and it's off the back of just beating the ever-loving shit out of the Cleveland Browns.
Felt good to finally have just a laugher there. And granted, there was a brief period there in the middle of the game where there was a lull in the scoring, and I guess it was enough to get Adam Johns pissed in his pants. I was listening to Hogan Johns, and he was like, "Nah, be honest. When it was 14-3, you were a little worried." And I was like, "No, I'm not, because I'm not a little piss baby." Adam.
Are you fucking stupid?
Wasn't he worried about the birds?
Wasn't he too worried about the birds to care about the game?
Well, he was also the one that was like super worried about Shadur. He was on that Chris Broussard shit. He was super worried about Shadur coming into the game. But yeah, no, the Bears they put belt to ass.
Yeah.
As the kids say, on the Cleveland Browns. They're 10-4. 10 goddamn wins, Travis.
Insane.
I can't remember.
If you had told me before the season the Bears were gonna be 10-4, I would have been like, that's crazy. But
if you had followed
it up with saying they also still might not make the playoffs even, I would have been like, what the fuck is happening?
Yeah.
In this season you're describing.
Really fucking brutal to be in this with the Bears 10-4 with 3 games to go and still have nothing goddamn guaranteed.
Yeah.
And then watching the goddamn Buccaneers and the Panthers be like, "Nah, I don't want the division. Do you want it? Do you want to go to the playoffs?" And we're like, "Ah, no, you take it. No, you take the playoffs. I don't want the division."
We are staring down like an 8-6 Detroit Lions team hanging on to their last desperate hope. And then, yeah, you've got the Bucks and Panthers who are like, I want to lose to Tyler Shuck really bad.
Yeah.
That's all I want to do.
It was the Panthers thing was especially funny because I don't know. I mean, you're not on Twitter. God bless you. You never really have been.
Yeah.
That's smartest thing you've ever done, certainly. But like, I don't know if you know this about Panthers fans. You give them an inch and those fuckers get mouthy. Like they will take a mile. They are one of the yappiest fan bases out there that I have encountered. And like after the Bucks choked on Thursday night, I mean, they were talking so much shit. There was one there was this one guy in particular. He was like looking at the NFC. He posted a picture of the NFC playoff standings and he was like, we can beat. And it was like the Bears, the 49ers, the Seahawks, or the Rams, and and he was like we could beat it, and the Eagles, he's like, we could beat any of these bums in the wild card round. So as soon as that they flopped onto the Saints and got swept by the fucking Saints, I was like, you can't even beat the fucking Saints, man. So
that's just the way the NFC and the NFL is this year, right?
But yeah,
you beat
no,
the Rams
Bears
1 week, and then you get your ass beat by Tyler Shuck the next week. I don't know.
The Bears are 10-4. I can't. Did you have was your prediction 9-8? Was that where you were at before the season?
I said I was hopeful of 9-8, and if they hit 9-8, that would be such a massive success that
I would not be able
to contain me.
I think my official prediction was 8-9, and mm-hmm. I said the one scenario in which I could see, you know, I said if you get the Caleb nuclear scenario, they could win up to 12. I don't even know that we've gotten full nuclear Caleb. We've gotten a lot of cool stuff from him. This game,
man, the last
this
two
game,
weeks,
he looked a little.
I would say
looked a little. The last six quarters, anyways, looked a little nuclear, little dangerous. But yeah, no, 12 wins still in play. 13 wins technically still in play. We'll see how this goes.
Month of the season, man. It has felt like the year of the second year quarterback. It feels like Broncos, Patriots, Bears. Especially with the Packers suffering.
Not every second year quarterback, though. Hey, we're going to talk. I was setting us up for later. Not every second. We got some other. There's some other second year quarterbacks doing some.
Three second year quarterbacks are doing great. The other three, not so much. Kyle.
We could have a little chat about that too. No, the Bears positive point differential now, motherfuckers.
Crazy.
They're plus 20. They got their own. They finally handed out their own ass whooping to erase finally the Lions beating from week two and fix their point differential. And now, honestly, with the way the Bears defense has played, going back to the Eagles game and with the positive point differential, you look at the numbers, the Bears ain't that lucky anymore, guys. Don't look now, but they might. They're transitioning from fluke into just good ass football team. So
we talked about this 2-3 weeks ago, I think it was. You know, the Bears, maybe they did get lucky a bit in that first half of the season. Sure, the Raiders win. God, it felt like they needed every single lever of luck to get pulled to pull that one out. You know, didn't look super strong. Yeah, maybe there were some flukes there early in the season, but they won enough of those fluke games to mature into an actually good team to hit that,
right.
Well, that lion stride from, you know, 1-7 to 9-8. It feels like these Bears just got the wins early, too.
Well, it's like we said, the close game luck was offsetting the injury luck because they have still got the most starts lost to injury. And unfortunately, we're going to have to talk about our wide receiver situation here in a minute because they're going to add to that list probably on Saturday for at least one guy, maybe two. But yeah, they got lucky in one regard in terms of, you know, the close game luck, but they were also horribly unlucky in terms of injuries, which was part of why they were in so many close games. As we were talking about, they kept being the better team in most of those. The Raiders game is kind of a notable exception that they were consistently outgained in that game.
Yeah.
But like, they outgained the Commanders by quite a bit. They were the better team on a per play basis. They won the turnover battle. They just fucking had penalties and all kinds of shit get in the way. They massively outgained the Saints. They made games close mostly through their own fuck ups, not really because they were, you know, this is not, people were trying to compare them to the 2022 Vikings, but the 2022 Vikings were like 13-4 with a negative point differential or something. They were like negative 27 or something on the year.
Yeah.
So not quite the same shit. But yeah, no, the Bears are good. They're fucking good. And they played good on Sunday. They did. Starting with where we always start. Let's start with number 18. Let's start with the quarterback.
We're going to start with Caleb Williams,
folks. He's good. Anyways, let's move on. He was great.
I feel like there's some stuff we could just like,
there's some stuff
we could him about in there, I guess, if you want.
Do we want to, I mean, well, first of all, it was easily his most, I know the fucking completion percentage wasn't there. Because of the fucking drops. Again, let's get it. We'll get to Kyle Monongai in a second.
I think the completion percentage wasn't there because of the weird last 2 minutes of the first half. Just the strangest play calling and decision making.
Well, there were.
It didn't end up mattering at all.
So. Well, he had an adjusted completion percentage of over 80% in that game.
Yeah.
There were, I think, PFF officially credited them with 4 drops. I think closer to 5. I don't think they counted the one where Kmet left his feet for no reason, as he is wont to do. I don't think they counted that officially as a drop. I think they said that they called that a pass breakup.
That's right. I think Cole's got the system gamed right there. He's like, if I dive for every pass for no reason, it's never a drop.
He's doing the Jim Edmonds. If I dive, I can make this look really impressive, and if I don't get it, no one can blame me because, I mean, I had to fucking dive for it.
That was so hard. It was so difficult.
If they gave out gold gloves for tight ends, that's how Cole's going to get his. That's how Jim gamed the system all those years.
Yeah.
Caleb was consistent. He was accurate. He was thrown with anticipation. He hit a couple passes in this game that we haven't seen a lot of lately.
Yeah.
So that was kind of cool to work. The deep outbreakers that he was mostly hitting early in the season to like Rome and stuff. And, you know, there's a couple of them in the Lions game I can remember. But that kind of went away as they really focused on the middle of the field. He had that beautiful deep out to DJ, and it was right after a beautiful play action, just layered an outbreaking route over the top of the defender to get it to Colston, who made a diving catch. Kind of nice that we got at least one guy who can do those.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I thought
you were talking about the little PA rollouts where the tight end hit a chip and then
those were
let
nice
the guy too. Go and then. Just throw it right over him. Nice soft touch
pass. He was showing some. Yeah, he was showing some real.
Since the second half of that Eagles game, Caleb has shown an eagerness to throw those nice touch passes.
He was the first touchdown pass to DJ in this one was outstanding. That is not with the way the space is condensed there. That is not an easy pass. DJ certainly had plenty of separation, but that is not an easy pass. There's not a ton of room. That is a pass that I think Caleb overthrows or throws wide pretty earlier in this game, throws a little too much heat on it.
Yeah.
You know, probably misses that one week one against the Vikings. So that was encouraging to see. Really just the only real negative for Caleb in this game, that two of the three sacks he took, don't blame him at all. Not mad at all. The one sack on the 4th and 3 with Cole, that one was kind of disappointing. I will say I watched that one over and over again. I don't think he made a mistake in not looking at Cole right away. Cole was obviously not the first or even second read in the progression. And I think with Myles Garrett, his internal timer, I think, was telling him that you don't have time to read the whole field, but it's a bummer that he didn't feel that, like, on that play, he actually did. The line held up really well, even though they were an empty. And I get it. You're in empty against Myles Garrett. You're telling yourself, I got 2 seconds before I need to start to look out at this pocket. But I wish he'd been able to find cold there. Otherwise, if he had, that would have been pretty much a perfect day. And then, of course, the viral throw, the throw, the hero throw.
Yeah.
Do we need to go in? I think the people that listen to this podcast are far too smart for this shit, but I have seen far too many people. Yeah, you never, don't ever throw that one again. Ah, don't do that. Fuck off.
Yeah.
You play to win the game. Don't make me go Herm Edwards on you bitches. Okay.
Nobody, no, listen to me. Nobody says that shit to Pat Mahomes, even though he's been throwing for under 7 yards per attempt for 3 years now. Nobody says it to Josh Allen. Nobody would say it to Justin Herbert.
Nobody would say it to Lamar Jackson. It gets to, this has been the main problem with Caleb since the day he was drafted. Not Caleb, but the way people treat him is that all of the reasons that Caleb Williams was the number one overall pick, everyone fucking hates about him and doesn't want him to do it. Like, the minute he got drafted, it was like, okay, Caleb, you're the number one overall pick. Oh, my God. We all love your highlights. Now, don't try that shit in the NFL, motherfucker. What I want from you is to play like Josh McCown.
That's right.
Pop 3 steps and get the ball out, motherfucker. Take your checkdowns.
That's not even fair to Josh McCown. Josh McCown throws that pass.
That's true. He
would. He's like, that motherfucker will catch it,
If Alshon Jeffery was down there. But here's the thing. Even if I wasn't just talking about how, you know, oh, it's a cool ass throw, and I, you know, no risk it, no biscuit. That pass isn't anywhere near as risky as it looks on broadcast view. Like, if you watch the All 22, if you look at it from the rear, there is space. DJ Moore has a window. Caleb sees it. He actually throws it with a little bit of anticipation. DJ's not even in view when he lets that ball go because he knows where DJ's going to be. And credit to DJ for being where he's fucking supposed to be. Hasn't always been, but we got to call, you know, we got to signal him out when he is. So that was awesome. And he puts it, Caleb, 100%, he puts it where either DJ is going to catch that ball or it's going to sail harmlessly out of bounds. The defender came too far forward. Caleb felt it. That was my favorite. I was arguing with people on Twitter who were like, but if the safety was half a step, if the safety's half a step back, Caleb doesn't fucking throw it, man. Yeah. Reading the defender is what happened on that play. That's why he threw it. If my grandmother had wheels, she'd be a wagon. Like, that's a nonsensical. And what really pisses me off is he set the record for fewest interceptions in his first 1,000 pass attempts in history. This is the least intercepted quarterback of all time. And not just that, as someone on our brilliantly intelligent Discord pointed out, Caleb has 12 career interceptions, but 4 of them came in his first 3 games. He has thrown 8 interceptions since week 4 of last year. This is a guy that you should trust, knows what he's doing in that specific area. He's not going to put the ball in harm's way very often. The few times he did, I mean, against the Packers last week on a 4th-and-1 do or die play. Yeah. And he didn't get enough on the throw, but like, when Caleb Williams makes that throw, especially he made it on first down, after you should trust him that ball is either going to be a touchdown or nothing. Thank God, this is my favorite thing about Ben Johnson too this year, is that every week, Monday, Ben Johnson comes out and he says exactly what I would want him to say about Caleb Williams every week. He doesn't fall for the trap that the people on the Score and everything else are doing when they're freaking out about him every week. Ben Johnson is like, yeah, I mean, there are not a lot of guys who can make that throw. It's really friggin' cool when you got a guy who can, and that ball was either going to be our guy or nothing. So I didn't have a problem with them throwing that either. I also really liked Kurt Warner being asked if that was an ill-advised throw, and Kurt was like, it would be ill-advised for me, but not for Caleb Williams. And that's actually something that Kurt Warner talked about a couple weeks ago too, where he was talking about Caleb, you know, and some of the questionable decisions he's made or some of the hesitation he's had this year, where people don't understand that life is sometimes harder when you are, as a quarterback, when you are as talented as Caleb Williams. And I think we talked about this last week on that 4th-and-1 play, where, like, when you're Caleb, you know, on that snap, I could run for it, or I could do this, or I could do that. I could sidearm it. I could do this. Like, he has so many options. Whereas a Jared Goff doesn't. Jared Goff's like, I'm rolling out and I'm throwing that fucking ball come hell or high water, because if we don't, I'm getting sacked. I don't have any other choices. And so Caleb, he's learning to calibrate. He's, you know, but it can cause a little bit of a lag time there, not because he doesn't see it, not because he doesn't understand what's going on, but because he has to consider one of like five different options that he has on any given play, because he's just that fucking talented. And you see from throws like that why it's worth wading through every frustrating part of his development, all the missed throws, everything else. It's because he's calibrating and because he can fucking do that.
Yeah, and you saw a lot of plays now as the Bears offense has developed throughout the season are focusing on all of the ways Caleb Williams can hurt you and all of the ways this offense can hurt you. There's a running threat. There's going to be a rollout threat, a threat of Caleb running. There's going to be a threat of him throwing on the move. There's going to be a threat of him throwing on time. There's a deep threat on almost every play, and it's just too much. It was too much for the Browns to cover. And here's the thing. A lot of people have said, it's a bad team. Bears are supposed to beat up bad teams, you know? And yeah, the Browns are a bad team overall. They've lost a lot of games this year, but it's the offense. Defense is good, especially Miles Garrett, but throughout that defense, that is a very talented defense to do this to that team. I mean, look at what they did to Jordan Love. They beat the Packers by completely suffocating that Green Bay offense. And that's back when they were pretty healthy, or at least when they had Tucker Kraft. So do not take this as a nothing burger. You know, we weren't beating up on the Cardinals here, like a team that's completely given up, a team without a defense. We're beating up on a team with a defense and with a guy in Miles Garrett who has something to play for very much right now. Pretty impressive win.
Yeah, I mean,
you can tell Caleb is feeling it now, man. Like before in the season, he was very prim and proper, very even keeled. You know, he like, I'm going to defer to the team. I'm going to say all the right things. Oh, man. He was like, he was so excited in the postgame locker room. He was so excited for DJ Moore.
My favorite thing that he did, and I love when he claps back. I believe that's the proper usage of the clap. He claps back at the haters, is what the kids say. I love that, you know, Courtney Cronin asked him about it because he was 10 of 13. He's like 10 of 13 for 152 yards or something on play action against the Browns. And Courtney asked him about that. And he was like, that's weird because I was told I couldn't go under center and turn my back to the defense and run play action. So I love that, you know, it's, I don't want to beat the guy up too much. And I know that he mostly meant it in jest, but when Mitch Trubisky made the, I just turned the TVs off in Hallis Hall, so we don't hear the criticism, you know, focus on what's said in our building. Like, to go from that to Caleb, who is clearly keeping all of the receipts and is fueled by that. And I fucking love it. And he also, did you see he reposted after they won the game? He reposted the video of LeSean McCoy saying that Shedeur Sanders was going to outplay. Like, yes, just fucking. Anyways, even after that beatdown, the Browns are still fourth in EPA per play against on defense. They are still, I believe, first. Hold on. Their filter's not right. Yeah, they're still, I believe, tied for first in success rate against. And I believe they are second or maybe third to Houston, or fourth to Houston in terms of, like, drop back EPA against. So that's a tough ass pass defense.
Hell yeah.
That, again, you can go look up what Jordan Love did against him. You can look at what Jared Goff did against him. Drake May had a pretty good game throwing the ball against him, but still took five sacks and I believe threw a pick six in that game. The Browns offense. Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll talk about the Bears defense in a minute. They obviously had a good game, but we'll put an asterisk on that, but you don't need to put an asterisk on the offensive performance at all. In my opinion, that was a great defense that they embarrassed. And the other thing is I want to say about that Caleb touchdown pass is that is a big, if you don't think that is a part of why the Bears have the best rushing attack in the NFL over the last 8 weeks, you're fucking stupid. Because I mean, go back to the Eagles game when Herb Street was fucking begging Vic Fangio to bring a safety into the box and he wouldn't do it. And you could almost feel you could feel Herb Street's frustration as a broadcaster that he wouldn't do it. But what happened in that game? The minute that Fangio brought another guy into the box, you had the dagger to Kmet.
Cole Kmet just goes behind him, he's wide open.
And then you watch this Browns game, and you watch that hero post to DJ Moore. And you know what every defensive coordinator who's going to play the Chicago Bears is fucking thinking about when he brings his safeties too far up to try to stop the run? He's thinking that fucker with that arm can threaten every layer of my deep. There is not a spot on, even with his inaccuracy issues. And yeah, but you can't bank on him missing because you know he can hit it. Yep. So you if you're a defensive coordinator, you have to account for the fact that he can fucking do that to you. He can do it rolling left. He can do it rolling right. He can kill you with his legs. If you don't think that's a factor in them being able to run the ball the way they have, you're fooling yourself, because it absolutely is. And that's why they don't face stacked boxes a lot, because they're just like, yeah, okay, bring it. They would love – I mean, Ben Johnson – we talked about it after the Eagles game. Ben Johnson was so disappointed that they didn't bring a safety down. Ben was like, I wanted to pop them over the head more often than we did. They wouldn't bring the damn safety down, so I just kept fucking running the ball. Yeah. So that's part of it.
Absolutely. Kyle, the discourse about that throw about, like, well, what would you have done if it was perfectly covered? And a bad idea to make that pass. It reminded me of a moment from our childhood, our shared childhood. And we were in gym class doing archery, and I dry fired a bow.
Oh,
our PE teacher looked at me and he was like, Travis, by God, what would you have done if you had an arrow in that bow? And I was dumbfounded. I was like, I would not have shot you with an arrow. And then I had to run a lap. I still don't understand this. And Kyle was right there. And I look over at Kyle and he's like, I have nothing. I don't know, man.
About that in 15 fucking years.
Just me and Kyle sit there in our terrible PE uniforms. Like, what do you mean? If there was an arrow in the fucking bow. That's what this is. Caleb would not have thrown the pass, you know?
And again, if it's Shedeur Sanders who makes that pass, if it's Jay Cutler who makes that pass, I understand the skepticism. If you thought he panicked and he just threw it up but again, this isn't a guy who doesn't throw a lot of interceptions. Literally the least intercepted quarterback of all time. I think this is a guy with 26 interceptions total. I looked it up. It's 26 interceptions total since high school. And Caleb also literally said this today. He was like, if I throw a pass like that, I know what I'm looking at, and like it's gonna be my guy or nobody. And that we talked about this too with Caleb's completion percentage, and how part of it is that, you know, Lamar Jackson has this on deep balls too. When Caleb misses those nine balls as fresh, Lamar Jackson is very much I would rather overthrow than underthrow.
Yeah.
And that's always been Caleb. That's why the accuracy is sometimes frustrating, and that's why I always say, like, a lot of his misses are more – they're more non-intentional – well, I mean, intentional throwaways in a sense. And Aaron Rodgers has always done this too. That's why Aaron Rodgers is the previous – Aaron Rodgers would always – and that's why, you know, Pro Football Reference tracks bad throw rate. And people freak out about that with Caleb because he leads the NFL in it or something. It's like 20%. But, like, you know who else has had a couple 20% seasons? Is Aaron Rodgers. And this is when he was, like, younger Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. Because Aaron Rodgers, we know Aaron Rodgers, if he doesn't get the look he's wanting, if your receiver doesn't run the exact route he wants, if he doesn't, he's just going to fucking, he's going to sail it over your head where nobody can get it. And then he's going to bitch you out in the hole. Caleb does that too. But, yeah, that's why the discourse around that. The Scottcast does not respect cowards. It never has.
No.
It never will. That's why every year in the draft that was a big part of my Jaden Daniels frustration pre-draft, is that people were talking about him like, oh, he's this great, he'll attack you downfield. And I'm like, no, he has a great deep ball completion percentage. Mm-hmm. Because he has Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr., but he actually goes deep way less than a guy with those two fucking receivers should. I don't respect cowards, goddammit. And then this is Caleb Williams, man. Oh, what am I doing? What happened there?
Oh, he's tumbling. He slipped over and he's spinning around, folks.
Anyway,
like he's on a submarine. All right.
Anyways, yeah, anybody that's bitching about that throw, just oh my god, get over it. Stop being a weenie.
Yeah.
Anyways,
absolutely.
The
only other note I've got related to Caleb Williams, which might transition into other things, is just it's nice to see him and DJ Moore getting on the same page.
Yes, that was
because we're going to need our star wide receiver.
Yeah, I mean
the next couple games, I think.
Props to Caleb. Props to DJ. There, they definitely worked it out this week. There was still, if you watch the quarterback school, if you have his Patreon membership, if you watch the breakdown of DJ Moore, there was still one play where he got very frustrated with DJ, and I admit it wasn't great. the first sack that Caleb took in the red zone, DJ gets kind of blocked and just kind of just stops running, kind of quits on the play. JT's like, quit, keep fucking running, keep playing the play, man. So that it's not perfect. I think DJ's just always going to be agitating, but it was nice to see, again, hopefully with, because a big problem with DJ has been his noticeable difference in effort when he knows he's the primary read on the play and when he knows he's not. Hopefully with him getting that ball on that hero post, I hope maybe he finally gets the message that this is not Carolina anymore. This is not Justin Fields anymore. It doesn't matter if you are the second option on the play or the third. There's a chance you'll still get the fucking ball. So be ready and run.
One thing that has never flagged for DJ this season is his blocking, man. He's an absolute pit bull blocking out there. There were a couple drives where all I could see was DJ Moore blocking his ass off on people who are twice his size. So very impressive there. And yeah, post game, it was nice to see him be like, God, about damn time. Like, it felt like he was like, man, it's all making sense now, at least. You know, he's running good routes. He got a couple touchdowns in this game. And with Rome out probably through the end of the season, it sounds like, and Luther Burden week to week, we are going to need our allegedly best wide receiver to be out there beating ass.
Yeah. Yeah, the Rome thing is extremely frustrating. I don't know anything about being an athletic trainer. I hate to be like, fire everybody, but I don't know how you have three different guys this season rush back from injury, Jalen in week two, Kyler, now Rome, that you cleared to play and they couldn't even finish the game where they came back. Like, someone's got to answer for that.
Tyreek too, right? Tyreek did that same thing this year.
Yes, popped in with the hip and then popped right back out. Yeah,
he was out again for a half, but he came back the next game.
Yeah, that's really frustrating. But yeah, now Rome, I mean, it does sound like, knock on wood, presuming we clinch things and get to the playoffs, I think we'll have Rome back for that, but it does sound like they're weighing, you know, how much they need him right now versus the benefit of just shutting him down until then. So, Burden, it does sound like, is more day-to-day, week-to-week. Like, I think it's still a legitimate chance he plays Saturday against the Packers. I think that one really will be a game-time decision come down to the wire. It doesn't sound like it sounds like it's a minor ankle sprain. It's not the dreaded high ankle sprain, so we'll see there. But yeah, no, great from DJ stepping up right when we need him to. Good on Caleb throwing him the ball. Because sometimes it hasn't always been DJ. Sometimes it has been Caleb. Now, I think some of that DJ earned by not being Caleb, I think we really do see. And this is, I'll transition into Monongai here in a second.
Yeah,
I do think Caleb is one of those guys who kind of adjusts in real time based on whether he can trust you.
Yeah,
and whether you've been reliable of late. And that's a little bit of Aaron Rodgers, because we know Aaron Rodgers, you drop a ball, doesn't matter if you're open, he's going to ignore you for a while until he absolutely has to throw you the ball. And I think that's Caleb to an extent. And so I think good on DJ for being reliable and being where he's supposed to be, but also good on Caleb for trusting him, giving him a chance. Hopefully the two of them now see that can work and they build off that. But also, oh my God, Kyle Monongai. So
he should not ever be thrown out. And Caleb knows it. He fucking knows it.
People have been complaining all year long about Caleb not taking his check down.
Yep.
And I'm telling you, folks, when you go back and watch, when the check down option is Komet in the flat or Loveland in the flat, Caleb will throw it. When it's Swift in the flat, he'll sometimes throw it, although Swift hasn't been super reliable in that department either, especially in Green Bay. He had that one that he dropped. But like, Monongai is slow to release a lot of the time in his check downs. There was a play, the first red zone drive against the Ravens. Caleb looks for Kyle when he's supposed to be there in the progression of the check down for what should be a wide open touchdown. Monongai, for no reason, is late getting out there running the route. And then you've also seen him just clank multiple passes and not hard ones, little gimmies.
The screens, three screens this year he has dropped. Balls in his hand. You know?
Yeah, and I mean, and he's got to step that up, because you have to be able to catch a screen. You have to be able to. I am not asking you to be LaDainian Tomlinson, but like, if you can't even be relied on to catch the check down, you are going to very quickly become a formation tell. You're going to be out there, and the defense is going to know, oh, Monongai's in. This is going to be a run, and that can't happen.
Well, the other problem is his pass blocking is pretty awful too. He is not a good pass blocker. He's getting blown up a lot. He gets run through sometimes. He gets run around sometimes. He is a Like sometimes it works, but when it doesn't work, it's like he's a ghost. It's like he's not there. You're just going right past him. Swifty has him beat in pretty much every way at this. Like, if we're being honest, it's really fun to watch the little guy ram headlong into dudes and just keep going. Like, that's awesome.
Manongai this year, just double check. Manongai this year, PFF has him down for 18 targets. He has dropped 4 of them.
Yeah.
That is a drop rate.
I can remember all 4.
Of 27%. That's just like, and Caleb, just, you can't trust a guy who, one out of every, more than one out of every 4 passes you throw to him, he's going to fucking drop. You just can't, you can't live like that. Yeah. So
it was 3 screens. And then it was that one wide open check down in the Raiders game where we were just screaming at the TV.
Yeah. And not to excuse Swift either. Swift's got 3 drops this year.
I think he has like 41 targets though.
On 39, which is still not great. Like that's almost a 10% drop rate, which is not good.
Yeah.
That's part of it too. Some of it is that Caleb is a big game hunter. Caleb likes to push deep. Caleb tries to make plays, but like, I do wish that people would factor that into the discourse a little more when they're like, Caleb needs to just learn to take his check down, take the free yards. They're not free if the guy drops the fucking ball.
Yeah.
And that's what Caleb is thinking. Caleb is thinking, if there's a 50% chance this is going to be fucking dropped anyways, I might as well just take the shot 40 yards downfield. We're looking at 2nd and 10 either way, man. So that's part of it.
What's worse about this is the passes that have been dropped this season, like specifically by Manongai, but also by Zacchaeus, who has been just a massive problem on this team.
And these are
easy passes that were going to go for maybe long touchdowns. Just nothing but green grass in front of them, you know, and it's just right in their hands and nothing. Like, and I could sit here and be like, Kyle, you told me Olamide Zacchaeus was so good for a while, but he was so much better than this before he got on the Bears. And it's just it's been embarrassing.
That was an unfortunate fall off. Yes, but speaking of someone who doesn't drop a lot of passes, we've been saying it every week, but I'm going to say it again. Colston Loveland is a fucking star. He's a top 5 tight end already, and I don't think I'm being a homer saying it. I think it's probably like Trey McBride, Tucker Kraft, RIP, George Kittle. I don't even think Kelsey is at this moment in time anymore.
No way. He's not good right now.
Who did I say? McBride, Kittle, Kraft. Who else would he put up there?
He's up there. The thing that I assume you're rating so highly and fairly is his blocking. He is so far ahead, run and pass blocking. He is a machine. Young guys are not this way.
I'm going to try to see if I had a tweet actually where I was talking about since he returned to the lineup from his hip injury. Let's see here. Fill the airspace, Travis. Talk about Colston.
Yeah. I think what you were talking about earlier about checkdowns has been very positively affected by Colston's return because Caleb is taking.
Oh, Brock Bowers. Brock Bowers is probably the other guy I would still put ahead of him right now.
I think he's being taken seriously as that checkdown option because Caleb's like, this motherfucker never drops a pass, always gets yard after the catch, always seems to get like just more out of a play than you'd expect. And beyond that, his chip blocks. Chip blocks are terrifying.
So since he returned from the hip injury.
For a young guy, this is insane.
So since he returned from the hip injury week 6, Colston is 5th in receiving yards among all tight ends. He is 2nd in PFF receiving grade. He is 6th in yards per route run, and he is 6th in run blocking grade.
Yeah.
That's from not just a rookie, because Tyler Warren is a rookie, and we talked about this at draft time as to why we preferred one to the other. Tyler Warren's 24. Yeah. Colston Loveland is 21. This is not just a rookie. This is a young fucking rookie who's doing this. He's a star, and he's going to be one for a while.
When you talk about run blocking grade there, I think a lot of people, you rattle off those numbers before that, and they're thinking, well, we're thinking all the starting tight ends in the NFL. Folks, that is including the blocking tight ends. Right. The guys who never catch a pass.
Yeah.
That is including the Smythes out there.
Yeah.
Colston Loveland is sixth out of all those tight ends.
Speaking of Smythe, that was fun. That holding call on him was absolute bullshit. Oh, he got called on a hold. That was just like week one when Jonah got called on a hold for humiliating his guy. That's what happened to Smythe there. He just fucking beat the guy's ass so bad he fell down, and they were like, oh, that's a hold.
I wanted to give a little shout-out to Moose on the broadcast. I thought a great game from Daryl Johnston, and he usually sticks out like a sore thumb.
What? No.
I enjoyed it.
He talked about Shadur and Caleb in that game like they had opposite stat lines. He was talking up his old teammate Dion's boy the whole way. He's talking about Shadur being like, yo, he's learning how to make better decisions. He's learning how to get. Meanwhile, Caleb thought
he was being pretty kind to Shadur as a young guy, but I thought everything he was saying about Caleb was fine. He was giving him a lot of leeway. He was ramping up as Caleb was doing well during the game. I don't know about that, Jim.
I don't know about that, Jim.
I enjoyed his call here, but normally I wanted to say I hate Moose. I hate having Moose on a call, but this game he's not killing me, man. Nah, not as good as Greg Olsen, certainly. He's our current favorite, and I've also been enjoying Tom Brady personally. But
yeah, the offensive line, man. I mean,
what more is there to say, right? I think we could talk about Ozzie, but I feel like he loses with grace against these insane defensive ends.
Since Ozzie took over as the starting left tackle, every week he's drawn Brian Burns or Abdul Carter. He's drawn T.J. Watt. He's drawn the fucking Vikings, and Brian. We'll just put Brian Flores on there as a pass rusher. He has drawn Micah Parsons, like just a never, and now he drew Miles Garrett. So yeah, I mean the PFF grade is not fantastic, but I would say, I mean, he was Theo Benedict was getting every bit as much help as Ozzie was getting, and still was a total liability in pure dropback situations. And Oz has been doing much better, in my opinion. I thought this was his best game as a run blocker so far, easily. And then, yeah, I mean, for the rest of the offensive line, there's really not a lot to say. That they are outstanding.
We should probably be taking this in more.
We should. This is rare. This is a fucking rarefied air that I'm just like, yeah, this is one of the best offensive lines in the NFL. I mean, Jonah Jackson. Did you see the trap block that Ben Johnson said he went to sleep dreaming about? Where he just fucking you're not a guy that you were a little bit more critical of than me in the draft process, and who has had a good rookie year. I want to note this, but he fucking told Mason Graham to hit the weight room, just absolutely bullied him. And yeah, I mean, Darnell Wright, not a surprise. Anybody had a great game. I enjoyed, again, quarterback school. He was talking about, he was like, if you talk about the players on this Bears offense, he's like, obviously Caleb can do a lot of amazing things. You got to do stuff for him. You want to draw up touches for DJ Moore. You want to draw up touches for Rome when he's in there. Luther Burden, great yak guy. Cole Kmet, you can do some play action with him. Colston Loveland, he's like, but the best player on this offense is 58. When you got to have it, like the plays that you should be drawing up, more are about what you think you can do with 58. And every, you know, short yardage situations, you know, every time it was third and one, he would point out like, yeah, I guarantee you this is going through Darnell through 58. And it did. But yeah, I mean, and then Joe Tooney, I mean, just like, it's really cool to fucking watch a Hall of Fame left guard every week, man. There's just
crazy, right?
Just like one of the, as a technician, just so good at everything he does. You know, Andrew Dahlman, you know, looking like the best free agent signing of the Poles era right now. So just a lot to love there. And of course, and it starts, it's not just those guys either. It's that you have in Ben Johnson, a guy who, you know, and it's really funny. There was a Courtney Cronin asked Ben Johnson about the influence of Mike Martz on his system, and Ben gave a really nice detailed answer, but basically the answer was, he was like, you know, it was really funny because if you know Mike Martz and you understand the way Ben Johnson talks, when Ben was like, I went out to dinner with him, and you know, he's a guy who really believes what he believes in, which is a really nice way of saying like he sure thinks that there is one way to do it, and it's the Mike Martz way. he's like, but we're mostly a mud of different systems than we do, which is, I think Ben Johnson uses a lot of the Mike Martz past concepts, but unlike Mike, who treated protections and everything else as an afterthought, as we well know, and as Jay Cutler used to know, but I don't think probably does anymore because of all the brain damage, like that was never Mike's game. But Ben Johnson starts first and foremost with the protections and how to block up those concepts so that you can, and he does it with deep drop play action, is with all that stuff. Just for as many seven-step drop concepts as there are in the playbook, it never feels like he's asking too much of his offensive line. Just brilliant protection schemes all around every week. Nobody's ever being asked to do anything that they aren't capable of doing. Just really, I mean, it's, yeah, I mean, we don't appreciate enough what this incredibly competent coaching was, especially because last year, that combination from hell between Shane Waldron and Chris Morgan, that was just the worst. I don't think the worst part was, I know talent wise, it's not the worst offensive line we've ever seen as Bears fans, but just in terms of scheme and just not even trying to have answers for so many things was just the most disgusting protection plan I've ever seen. And so the contrast between that and this year, which also speak of, we haven't spent enough time this year dunking on the Ty Dunn article as we should have. But to me, the funniest, the part that gets the funniest every week, looking back at that stupid hack article from Ty Dunn, is the part where someone anonymously talked up respected veteran offensive line coach Chris Morgan. Morgan, who worked for Sean McVay.
That's right.
And was like, I wanted to run all these beautiful protections and run checks, but Caleb Williams couldn't do it. And then you see Caleb Williams every week, probably killing 10, 15 run plays at the line every week, getting them into good looks and guiding the number one rushing offense in the NFL.
Yeah.
And just so fucking that whole staff was just so fucking bad at their jobs. And every week that this staff is so good at theirs, it just makes them look dumber and dumber.
I really want to drag Pat on here in the off season and just do a dramatic reread of the Ty Dunn article and dunk on it. If I can, I know he's listening. Folks, listen to Bear Weather Fans. First of all, it's a wonderful podcast.
Oh yeah. We love our boy, Pat. I like to consider that Bear Weather Fans formed during the Scodcast interregnum when we were gone and we were retirement, and for a while there he thought we were never coming back. So I like to think of that. I like to think of that as Bear Weather Fans as like the Frasier to our Cheers.
There you go. There you go.
So
are you calling
the Scodcast spinoff? But
I haven't said anything about that to Pat, but now you know. Now you know, yeah. Pat. You're listening to this. I'm gonna drag your ass on here and we're gonna read that article again and laugh.
Oh yeah. Anyways, boy, we've taken more time than I thought.
You mentioned Mason Graham. I've been wanting to say, hey, remember when I said that Mason Graham was going to struggle to rush the passer and get to the quarterback of the NFL, but he was going to be an elite run stopper. Guess what? He's got half a sack, but he's kind of a machine stopping the run. So
He wasn't on that play against Jonah. That's for sure.
No, he was not.
No.
Dude, Jonah, is he ever going to stop improving game to game? Is he just going to ascend to godhood in the playoffs or something?
Yeah, I mean,
can't believe it.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a Pro Bowler this year, man. I think he is. He struggled with Detroit week two, struggled both games versus Minnesota, but that's really about it. He's been pretty dominant other than that.
The only question is how many of these Bears offensive linemen end up in the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, so I guess before we wrap up our talk about the Browns game, because we do want to get on to a couple other things before we head out of here. Shadur Sanders sucks, man.
Did we spend 45 minutes on the offense? Let's talk about the defense. They only gave up 3 points. What the fuck are we doing?
Shadur Sanders really fucking sucks. He's bad. He's bad. He's so fucking bad. It was so funny to see. I will say I about lost my fucking mind when you look at the way Caleb Williams has been talked about this year, and especially about the fucking completion percentage. Darn. And then for Fox to put up a graphic that was like Shadur Sanders number 5 in the NFL in yards per completion over the last 3 weeks. And I was like, oh, over 3 weeks? You know, he's been top 5 in yards per completion pretty much the whole fucking season.
Yeah.
But all we ever hear about is completion percentage.
Caleb feels like the only rookie that I can think of over the past maybe 10 years, 5 years at least, who just got this awful rap immediately, and they never let off of him, you know? And now they're barely able to come out of it.
And so many people, because
this is what you should
do. Because he had 300 yards on, like, 50 fucking attempts against the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah.
There were people
who should give a young guy leeway. There are reasons why Shador is going to have trouble succeeding right now. Like, Dennis Allen's defense, if it's good at anything, if it loses all of its functionality against only the thing it's best at, the thing it's best at is fucking with young quarterbacks, all right?
Oh, yeah, if he had it
like
in
Shador
hell.
Was doomed from the start.
Yeah, the fucking interception that he threw to C.J. Gardner-Johnson especially, just he had no fucking clue what he was looking at.
No.
Just never had any sense of where that flat defender was. And the best part was C.J. knew it. C.J. didn't even bother covering the guy in the flat because he was like, he's going to force this ball to Fannin and I'm going to take it. So that was outstanding.
Yeah. The pick to DeMarco Jackson, to D.J., who has seized the starting role at linebacker out of nowhere.
Yeah, and almost... And almost every one of those, and almost every one of the sacks he took was just an egregious. I mean, there were a couple free rushers, but I mean the Jervon, and we love Jervon here. We do, but he's got some limitations. And I will say, how many seconds on the Jervon sack? Was it six? Was it seven?
Like just seven.
You cannot fucking take that sack.
Six, seven.
Don't you fucking do that to me.
You're welcome. You're welcome. First 6-7 on the Scottcast,
guys,
and it's Kyle's fault.
Watching football at my house, because you know how often during a football game the score is however briefly 6-7?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Every single time one of my kids walks in and sees a 6-7.
I think it's delightful. They tickle me, these kids, just from numbers they're having such.
But yeah, no, I mean, and I don't want to take anything away from the Bears defense. That was certainly an out, but that was what you should do to that team with those injuries and that quarterback who does fucking suck. But at the same time, like, it's that team with that quarterback, and I don't know that, you know, we can count on that kind of performance going forward, but that's exactly how they should have abused him. And speaking of injuries on their offensive line, Travis, did you blink and miss the Tevin Jenkins revenge game?
It was, I saw him in. He was in. We punted the ball down to their one, and I saw Tevin Jenkins, and they mentioned him. And then, like, three snaps later, he was gone, and I laughed.
It's like he never left. Oh, God.
That is the most Tevin Jenkins game ever.
Incredible.
Hello, Tevin. Goodbye again, Tevin. Did he ever really exist? Not just for the Bears, but in the NFL. No, is the answer. What a crazy turnaround from last year to being like, do we have to pay Tevin Jenkins? Is there any other solution to what, like, maybe the best offensive line in the NFL? I don't know what to say. We've never had this before, Kyle. This was the game that Caleb has been talking about all year. After every game, he's been like, we are always hunting for that game. The one where the offense scores and then the defense gets a turnover. And the offense scores and the defense gets a stop. And the offense goes out and gets good field position. And then the defense gets a turnover and scores. And this was that game. Like, everything was working. And this I feel like this team really wanted this game before they got into the postseason, which we haven't clinched yet, but... You know, before we got into even these last three games against three quality teams, they wanted this game where everything worked. They wanted to see what that felt like. So it's good to get that here against a great defense, against a guy like Myles Garrett.
Yeah, I think they head into this Green Bay game with a full head of steam, with a lot of belief.
And speaking of steam, the Packers have lost it.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I was pretty jacked up listening to D-Jack when he got his game ball in the post game. First thing he said, he's like, this is great, but I'm still fucking pissed about last week. And the whole locker room, you could tell, like, that was the energy. They didn't take their eye off the Browns, but that was a warm up for them for this rematch. So that's pretty exciting. Yeah, the Packers, boy, things changed in a hurry for them. My God. Yeah, Micah Parsons is out. You know, I think our buddy Nick, our Packer fan buddy Nick, is too depressed to even engage right now. So I don't think he's maybe even going to listen to this. But if he is, Nick, go ahead and mute real quick. But, like, look, I'm not celebrating an injury, but as a Bears fan, you kind of have to acknowledge, like, this is about the biggest injury that could happen to our biggest rival at this moment in time. And it really changes the complexion of this matchup, because the Bears offensive line kind of dominated that contest in the second half. With Parsons,
yeah,
I feel like the potential for the Bears offensive line to just, without Parsons, that Packers unit now becomes the worst defensive line that we have faced since the Bengals. It's been a long stretch of good ass defensive lines
over the last.
We faced the Giants, we faced the Vikings, we faced the Browns, we faced the Steelers.
Saints.
I think the Bengals are a worse defensive line than
the Saints. I would say the Packers are still probably better than the Saints, right?
Even without the Bengals, Parsons. So this honestly, if the Bears offensive line brings their A game, this is probably the easiest pass rush that Caleb will have faced in a hot minute. And we know he's pretty dangerous when he's got time. So that could really change this matchup big time. But it sounds like there's a decent chance that we might miss Christian Watson, who had really transformed their offense and stretches the field for them in a big way. So, I mean, a lot of factors have changed.
Yeah, granted, did well against the Bears last time.
Granted, the Bears might be out a couple of wide receivers, but at the same time, the Bears have been living in 12 and 13 personnel a lot lately anyways. And I think against an emaciated Packers defensive front that you were already running the ball against pretty well last time, you just fucking just beat their asses. Run it up, Herman. Leave no doubt.
Bears going to be out there running that pistol formation with the tight ends flanking Caleb.
I fucking love that formation. Bear football there.
Fucking great formation. I love to see it.
They are thrilling the nation with that one.
I've expressed this, and you're like, Travis, you're a fool. But I hate to see – you hate to see an injury, but I hate to see after we lost to Green Bay once – they lose their best player, because now, like, look, we're coming into this game and I do expect us to win this game. I expect us to hammer them at this point without Watson and without Micah Parsons at home on a weird night. We have dominated these weird night games since the first game of the year.
And thirsting for blood. They are.
And they absolutely want to destroy Green Bay and clinch the playoffs here and everything. I didn't want the asterisk. I like clean wins over Green Bay because they're so rare. We've talked about this before in our little offseason tournaments. I remember these games, the ones where we beat them with their starting quarterback out there. They were at full strength and we still got the win. So that's kind of upsetting. But on the other hand, fuck Green Bay, man. Like, let's get this win. Let's win the division. Let's kick them out of the playoffs. I don't know.
On the other hand, we fucking had to win a game this year with no linebackers. We've been missing four. I mean, but do you think those fuckers would ever give a shit? I mean, did they ever asterisk their trip to the Super Bowl because Jay Cutler got hurt? I don't think they fucking do. So,
right. And yeah, we've been.
If they want to put an asterisk on this shit, too bad. It's a violent game.
We played almost half the season. Starting our number one corner, who started the season as our sixth corner. We've played multiple games this season with linebackers who we had to sign off the practice squad. By the way, we had to release a linebacker from our practice squad today solely because we had called him up too many times and we couldn't put him back on the practice squad. It's not allowed by league rules. That's how bad our injury situation has been on defense. So no, do I feel sympathy for Green Bay in the sense that they have to feel sympathy for us for injuries? No. But it's tough. I don't hate the guys on this Packers team in the way that I have hated previous Packers teams, right? I don't feel personal animus for Jordan Love. I don't feel personal animus for like Matt LaFleur or Micah Parsons. Like, I enjoy those guys. You know, I blood hatred for Brett Favre, blood hatred for Aaron Rodgers. I still hate Devontae Adams, even though he's on the Rams. By the way, the Rams receivers got banged up in this game. Like, it's not just the Packers, Kyle. It feels like the sky is opening up for this Bears team in a way that is terrifying me.
There is the possibility. I'm just saying, like, I don't know that we have reached shuffle, but I do think we could say at the very least this team is here to feathers ruffle. So where they go from there, I don't know. But
this
we are at
team
that stage.
Is a legitimate contender. Beyond that, they are moving into favorite territory here with the Rams and the Seahawks. Depending on what happens with those guys the last few weeks of the season, they're a legit threat to take the one seed in the NFC.
There's a pass to the one seed there. Yeah. So I mean, but you gotta go claim it. So let's get our bloody ass revenge. And then let's just end on a happy note for everybody.
We're going to talk about Jaden Daniels, right?
We're going to talk about Jaden Daniels getting touchdown for the year, but mind you, he's not
Jaden, you got injured. Oh, but he says they're freak accidents, Kyle. They're freak accidents.
He's not even going on IR, though, because he really wants to practice with the team. Because what that sounds to me is that sounds like a guy who could play, but you're scared. You're scared to play him because he keeps getting hurt. Why does he keep getting hurt, guys? Is it because he ain't built for this? Is it because Twig Boy ain't got what it takes?
Curious.
You know, it's a violent game. You can't hide forever, mama's boy.
You know what? I think he can. He just goes and he cries about his bad luck in his mama's arms, and then she can take care of the news conference. You know, it's okay, Jaden. It's all right, buddy. Nobody could have foreseen any of these fucking injuries with the way you play. Nobody watching your college tape could have said, oh, this guy's going to get fucking hurt in the NFL.
Marcus Mariota's been better than you in this year anyways, motherfucker. So
At this point, we haven't been through it for a while because the Bears have had so much success and the Commanders are just a pile of shit where they belong. But again, I normally wouldn't have animosity towards Commanders fans for, you know, everything they went through with Dan Snyder. I understand that. But the way they went after you for just going out there and being like, here are the numbers. This is why Jaden Daniels is going to be a long-term failure in the NFL. Like, I don't know what to tell you. The way they jumped down your throat and, like, went after you was completely out of bounds. So it's really colored my feelings towards that team and Jaden Daniels as a whole to where now I'm like, guess what, motherfucker? This was always going to happen, and you kind of deserve it. So,
They were just fucking insufferable to me last year. And they started before he was even officially a Commander. Literally, all I did was the same shit I do every year where I'm like, here are statistics that I've found about the quarterback draft class. Isn't this neat? And they were like, fuck you. You fat piece of shit. Are you racist? And I'm like, no, I just think that a 25% pressure to sack rate is kind of problematic.
We noted this shit at the time, too. Yeah. We got a lot of Commanders.
Oh, there's in the here listening.
We could see where everybody listens from, and I noted it on the podcast. I was like, Kyle, there are a lot of people from Washington, D.C. listening to the podcast right now.
The receipts are out there.
Guess what episode the most people from DC listened to before the draft, Kyle? It was Caleb Williams. Guess what the second episode that they listened to? Was it Jaden Daniels? That was Drake May.
Yeah.
Jaden Daniels episode wasn't super popular with Washington DC fans, but boy, you guys turned a new leaf when you picked Jaden second.
Yeah. I still feel bad for the few that I talked to that were big May fans and I know that their team made a mistake there.
Yeah.
I would have just left it at that. I'd been like, well, they made their choice, and as they're an NFC team, I'm glad they did it, but they decided, they got personal. They got really fucking personal.
Yep.
So I will take your misery and personally enjoy it.
Commanders fans did not make this a look at how much better Jaden Daniels is than Drake May thing, which obviously would have fallen apart this year too. But that's what it should have been, right? Because that was the choice they got.
They
didn't get to choose between Jaden Daniels and Caleb Williams. But for some reason, they kept going after Caleb.
They went after us. They went after me. So
that's right. So enjoy RG6-7.
Enjoy watching the rest of the season from your couch, just like your quarterback. So
that's right. And just know that it isn't going to get any better because you have the oldest team in the NFL.
That's true. And you don't have a second-round pick. You don't have a fourth-round pick.
Yeah. Yeah, because you needed Debo Samuel for some reason.
Yeah.
And Jaden Daniels is not just going to magically get more resilient and healthier because injuries actually tend to be cumulative. If you get injured once, you get injured more, as you've seen during this season, Washington fans.
Yeah, just ask Kyler Gordon about that, man.
So. Yeah. Kyler Gordon, the new Tevin. Speaking of Tevin Jenkins, Kyler Gordon. Out for the season, and we are not going to speak of him again even into next year. I think
we're gonna adopt the Travis Frank fifth round pick policy, but for Kyler Gordon, which is that we will not talk about him until he is on the field for the Bears in a regular season game making plays.
That's right.
Which may never happen again, but until it does, he's not a person that we will consider going forward.
Indeed. Well, yeah. All right. I think that's about everything we wanted to say.
To be clear, that sucks. I like Kyler Gordon a lot. And I have seen some Bears fans that were like, he got paid. And then like, no. It sucks that he's fragile. And it's for our own good that we are counting him out, but it's not, I don't hate the guy. It's not his fault that he gets hurt a lot. So I want to clarify that before we go off there.
Thank God we could just magically sign CJ Gardner-Johnson off the scrap heap for nothing. And he could come in and just be Kyler Gordon out there. That's been fantastic.
That's
for
been
us.
Pretty cool. All right. Well, let's, I won't lie to you folks. I need this win on Saturday more than I have ever needed anything in my entire life. No pressure. Yep. So
Green Bay has been kicked in the dick. Let's stomp them in the head and put them out of their misery here this weekend, man.
Put the boot to the fucking
head. That's right. All right, go Bears.
Way out on that bumper floor. Now you know I'm leaving Chicago. I sure do hate to go. Now you know I'm leaving.